tend to listen to people and listen to ourselves. I mean, here I go getting weepy. We look at ourselves through our eyes. What a ruin, because God looks at us as the apple of his eye, that Winnie has to learn that it's having God's approval and living for God and being seeing herself through his eyes. And you can only do that when you live for him, because yeah. then you become obedient. And mm-hmm. that is the road to true happiness, true peace, true joy.
Welcome to the Literary Escape Podcast, the only podcast that serves both readers and authors of historical Christian romance. We read, discuss, review, and rate books in this unique romance subgenre, and sprinkle in a few contemporary Christian suspense books. Authors, we bring you inside tips and tricks from those who have gone before you. Then we bring both readers and authors together for fun-filled live Q&As. Literary Escape is the one-stop shop for both readers and authors to connect, learn, and grow together. Let's dive into this adventurous episode. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Literary Escape Podcast. And we're so excited to have Julie Lessman join us again. Welcome back, Julie.
Thank you. It's fun to be here.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've had a chance to connect. And I know you've had a lot going on. You just want to share a little bit and then we'll kind of jump into your books.
Yeah, I am just releasing another book in the series, the Cousins of O'Connor series, and it's my first novel in 3 years, which kind of freaks me out and kind of shocks me too. But the reason for that is I did, you know, God kind of forced my hand to do a memoir devotional right after A Dear and a Prayer came out, which I did. And then I expected him to give me my next book. He always does. And it was like zero, zilch. And I hit the wall. Could not write, you know, for like 2 years, couldn't do it. And I guess the reason for that was we ended up, I didn't know this was going to happen, but we ended up moving from Missouri to Alabama to be closer to my daughter, and which meant I had to get a house ready to sell. We had to, you know, all the work that's involved. And then there was just so much to do. I think I had, there were like four surgeries. I had three surgeries. Keith had two. There was just so much. So I figured God knew what he was doing, although I didn't like it. And I just couldn't write for a long time. I really started this book really, you know, like in April. So I did knock it out pretty quick, but it is shorter than my other books, which is good. So,
yeah, that is exciting. And you know what? I think we all go through those phases too, right? There's changes and there's things that we were doing that get put on pause, and then God brings them back, which is great. That is just wonderful. And so, but before we talk about your new one, let's jump back. I just wanted to let everybody know, first of all, Julie's devotional is amazing. If you haven't bought that and gone through it, you really need to. I mean, I think I wrote you when I started reading it too, and just said, like, I don't think I've ever done a devotional that like really pushed me to grow, I guess you could say.
Wow, what a compliment. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it was incredible. So I highly recommend that. But I also know that Julie's new book that's coming out, which we'll reveal the title in just a little bit here, it just continues the O'Connor family series. Mm-hmm. And so I highly recommend starting at the very beginning, which actually starts with your Christmas one with the grandparents' love story. And then goes into the kids, right?
Yes. The first, A Light in the Window. And I actually wrote that after I wrote my Daughters of Boston series, which is really the series that kicked all of this off. It was published by Revell, and it really was very successful. And that's what started all. So then I went back and did a prequel. The parents were such a big part and a wonderful part of the story. Even Revell said that they hadn't at the time seen anything where parents or a married couple were such a big part of the story, you know. Mm-hmm. But I like to have two-tier love stories, an older couple and a young, and of course the heroine. And I've told you this before, that's because I get real tired of the young kids having all the fun, because it doesn't stop. I mean, I'm 75 years old, and my husband and I, our marriage is better than ever. So you know, I that's what I want to get across in every book I write, and so that's what I did. And the parents were amazing. They're based on my husband's and my marriage, believe it or not. Except I'm not as good looking as she is. But anyway, so that's what you know. That's I did A Light in the Window. I went back after I wrote the six O'Connor books. I went back and wrote the prequel love story, and so that's really where to start. That's true.
Yes, that is. I just recommend that to people who are new to Julie, just because they're, like you said, there's the family members are so woven in that if you don't know some of that backstory, you might feel a little lost at times. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think you could pick it up and you'd be okay. But you would, I think it would just be richer, I guess.
I agree.
Experience if you went all the way back. But your newest one tags on to your most latest series, which starts with a Wing and a Prayer.
Mm-hmm.
I say latest. I hope you guys, I just want everyone to understand, like, Julie will do like three books kind of tied with a theme and then the other three, but they're all part of the O'Connor mm-hmm. family. So let's just talk about A Wing and a Prayer, because okay. that is being highlighted on the Christian Fiction Reading Challenge, correct?
Yes, it's the read for September. And what we do, what that Christian Fiction Reading Challenge is, it's 12 authors who are, and most of them are just amazing. I mean, you know, I'm in there. I don't know why I'm in there, but I am. It's like Tamara Alexander, Colleen Coble, Denise Hunter, Becky Wade. There's just, I mean, there's so many. And we decided we were going to do one book a month on a Zoom where, you know, it would be like in September, but it would be my month. So I'm going to have a sale on A Wing and a Prayer, a 99-cent sale, and on September 1st. And so what happens is that you can read that book, and the Zoom actually happens at the last Tuesday of the month. So that'll be, I think, the 29th of September. It gives people a whole, you know, month to read the book. And then you get on a Zoom, and it with all these authors, all of us are there, and I will be interviewed by one of them, and it's just fun. You can ask questions, you can either be on the Zoom, or you can do a question, submit a question ahead of time, and it'll get answered. And then I am running a special contest on my blog, where if you do come and submit a question that night or ahead of time, I would prefer that night, then what happens is I'll put your name in a hat for a $50 gift card. And so that's, and I think, I can't remember if I, no, yeah, just, it's just a $50 gift card. But right now I do have another contest going on where it's, I'll tell you about that later because that's on the new book.
It is. You're right. Okay. So today, when this episode airs, they can order A Wing and a Prayer for 99 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. The ebook?
The ebook, yes.
In the ebook, okay. And then they have until the last Tuesday of September to read the book, and they can join.
Yes. And
can you get connected on Facebook with that group? Is that right?
Yeah, it. That's right. It is on Facebook. And in fact, I think, and then we have a website. There's both a Facebook page and a website for the Christian Fiction Reading Challenge.
Okay.
And you can, that's where you sign up. You just go in, sign up, and then they'll send you all the information that you need to come to the Zoom.
Okay. Awesome. So I will, for those of you listening today, and this is new to you, I'll try to get a link in the notes for this episode too, so you can quickly get there if you'd like to join. We used to do some of those, we called them coffee and books time, where we had authors on and chat mm-hmm. about books. It is so much fun because you get to connect with people all over the world.
Yes, it's true.
We had on one, I can't remember if it was with your book or another book, but we had one lady, a missionary from Kenya, that joined and chatted with us about the book. So it was just a lot of fun.
How fun is that? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, Wing and a Prayer. Let's talk about the plot in that a little bit and our characters and kind of where they kind of spin off from your other series.
Yes, they do. Okay, A Wing and a Prayer is the book one in the Cousins O'Connor series. You know, with six books about the O'Connors, their six siblings, you know, I had to go somewhere from there. So from there, I went to Christmas books that just, you know, tagged on to the last book of the second series for the O'Connors. And that led me all up through the 30s. And then I wanted to do the Cousins. I was a little scared to do World War II. because it requires a lot of research, and I've never been fond of research. It's terrible, but boy, did I get my fill on this one, because book one, A Wing and a Prayer, is the most heavily researched book I've ever done. And after I did that, I really saw how wonderful it was to have a book like that that's just loaded with so much fun stuff. Anyway, so I wrote that, and I wrote it about Gabe. Her name is Gabriella Dawn O'Connor. She was adopted by the parents. So she's like the seventh sibling, and she was a foster child and got adopted, and she's now grown up, and she's always been a handful. And so she and her, the series is about her and her two cousins who are twins. Hope is her cousin, like a year or two younger than her. She ends up being a nurse in the war, and then Henry, Hope's twin, is a fighter pilot. Okay, all in the same war. So this series kind of starts with A Wing and a Prayer, kind of overlaps into Hope's story and then Henry's story. But A Wing and a Prayer is, it starts out where Gabe wants to become a WASP, which is a women's airline service pilot. And that was this select group of like 1,000 women that were pilots that they actually took the place of a lot of male pilots who then went into the war because the war needed male pilots. And so, but they still needed at home here, they still needed pilots to transport, troops and medical things. It was like really a very cool thing. So I thought, that'll be fun. I'll make her a WASP. Well, she goes into WASP training, and she's a pistol. She's, she breaks rules, and she's very popular, very charismatic, but she's also very hard because she was an abused orphan, okay? Yeah. And she is very angry at men, doesn't trust any man. Anyway, the hero in that book is... He's the godly one in the book. I always have one of them as godly, and he's a really good guy. He's an instructor at the WASP. What do you call it? Where they train the WASPs, and
like the fort or the
yes. Yeah. I'm sorry, I just kind of went out of my head.
No, that's okay. But
anyway, he's one of the pilots that train. He's a trainer, and he gets her, but he sees her the first day, and it turns out he is the brother of two boys that she beat up in grade school. She was a tough cookie, and she would beat him up. She gave him black eyes. She did all kinds of terrible stuff to him. And so that family doesn't like her. And this is the older brother. And she doesn't know him from Adam, but she knows his name, Kincaid, Alex Kincaid. Anyway, the story goes where she meets him there. Then he goes to the war. And then she goes over to the war. She kind of sneaks onto a medical ship because her father is editor of the Boston Herald, and they send women,
The journalists? Or
yeah,
reporters?
Yeah, where they investigate their reporters, their war reporters. And it's, I based Gabe and going on that medical ship over to the European theater, I base it on an actual situation that happened. The woman that was married to Ernest Hemingway, and now I don't remember her name, but anyway, she actually went, she snuck onto a medical ship that was taking troops over and nurses over, and she was there on D-Day. And it's a real true story. She did it. So I took that story, and I had Gabe sneak onto Hope's ship that was going over to the European theater. So anyway, she one of the war correspondents from the Herald couldn't go. She ended up getting pregnant, but they had her uniform, they had her name tag, they had all that. And because Gabe works at the Herald, she was a writer there, like a copywriter. She finds it and she changes them and she goes on over. So that's how that starts. So she starts out the first half of the book as trying to become a WASP. And the second half of the book, she goes over to the war as a war correspondent. And that's where she runs into Alex once more. And he's got a best friend that she is kind of dating and stuff. And anyway, it's like a triangle type thing. And while she's over there, she gets She gets to go to Paris, the liberation of Paris. She gets to go to the Netherlands where Project Garden, I think, I forget. Forgive me, I wrote this book like 4 years ago.
Yeah. So probably more than that, I think.
Market Garden. I think it was Market Garden. It was like D-Day and all these different, you know, projects they had, the war had that they named, you know. Anyway, so she does all this wonderful stuff, and it's all based on fact. In other words, there isn't anything that happens to her in the book, whether at the WASP camp or whether she's a war correspondent in Europe, that hadn't actually happened. I mean, I researched stories up the Gazoo, like when she's flying at the WASP camp, she's trying to get her wings, okay? And she falls out of the plane at 10,000 feet, and she has a parachute on, but she makes it okay. That actually happened to a WASP. There was a snake in the cockpit, which Gabe puts in her enemy's cockpit at the WASP camp, and that actually happened. So all the stuff that happens that Gabe does and that happens to her is all fact. I mean, it's based on fact. Anyway, so and the war, everything that's in there is so fun because I found out that Hitler loved Coca-Cola, absolutely loved it. And he would drink Coca-Cola and watch Gone with the Wind in his theater. Now, anybody that knows me, I'm a Gone with the Wind freak. And when the war started, Coca-Cola, the government shut off Coca-Cola, the syrup, from Germany because they had a Coca-Cola plant over there, but the syrup was special, you know, they had to ship it over or something, and they stopped that. So Hitler couldn't get his Coca-Cola anymore. So what they did, the owner of the Coca-Cola plant in Germany, he tried to create a substitute, and that's where they came up with Fanta. Believe it or not, Fanta soda. I mean, there's so many cool stories like that. You can't even imagine. Yeah. And that's what really convinced me that research is so worth it. It makes a story so rich. So anyway, that's basically the story. It's a somewhat of a love triangle throughout the whole book over in the European theater. Mm-hmm. And it was fun to write, I got to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, and I enjoyed reading it. And I think I remember we interviewed you on that book when we highlighted that series a few years ago. I remember you sharing that was a true story about somebody sneaking on. When I read that, I thought, I wouldn't have the guts to do that.
I know.
I'd be a nervous wreck. I know.
Yeah, and I didn't do my research here. I should have just kind of went through and got the names and some of the stories for you. But if you read the book, you'll see them.
Yeah. Yeah. She's definitely very bold.
Mm-hmm.
And she does have a lot of her like past trauma to work through. And I think Alex was a great pairing for her.
I think so. Yeah.
Especially given like the altercations she had with his younger brother.
So yeah. Yeah.
It just adds another layer to the story. But you also I know we mentioned like the other O'Connors that are in the books before are all woven into the story as well. So
yes, you know, it's more of I refer to the O'Connors as the O'Connor saga, an Irish family saga, because they're always in every book. Yeah. And it from the very beginning of book one, A Passion Most Pure, that's what Revell, I remember at the time when they gave me a 3-book contract, they said the family was so rich and they'd never seen a 2-tiered lover story like that with the parents. And they said it was very unique. And that's one of the reasons I got the contract.
Yeah.
And so I keep the family throughout every book in the O'Connor saga because people get close to them. I got close to them. They're like my family. And I have so many readers that tell me, oh my gosh, they're like family. And I go, they are. They are. I had one young gal that wrote me and she said that her parents were really worried because she'd read A Passion Most Pure 15 times. And they said, you got to read other things. I mean, it creates that family that feels so real, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do an excellent job. And I actually really like the multiple point of views. Sometimes, you know, I personally, when I wrote book one of my series, I had 8 point of views, and I was told that. To cut it down. They're like,
yeah, but I did like that because I'm a point of view gal, you know. Mm-hmm. I like to be in each other's heads, you know.
Yes. So there are like several scenes and sections that just got deleted out. I saved them. But that's something I truly enjoy about your writing, because I like seeing the reaction of a whole family. Because when something happens to one member of the family, it's not just them, right? It is impacting everybody. And you do a really good job of showing that. Which I think is why your readers really enjoy the family. Like, it just feels like family.
Well, they feel a part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the start of the cousin O'Connors. And then it goes to, is it a hope and a prayer?
Yes.
And then a dare and a prayer.
Yeah. Right? It's I started out with a wing and a prayer. And then the second book is about hope. Mm-hmm. Gabe's cousin and Henry's twin. So obviously that had to be a hope and a prayer. And the third one is Henry, who was just a pistol growing up. I mean, such a, and he's a womanizer. And so that's a dare and a prayer, because his buddies dare him that he can't get this one nurse to you know, to go out with him, because she doesn't go out with anybody. She wants to be a missionary, and she's gorgeous, and she's just untouchable. And so that starts out where they bet him money that he can't get her. So he takes the dare. And boy, does that open up a can of worms.
Yes, it does. And I love in Hope and a Prayer, with Hope, they find that, I believe it's an orphan over there that has a similar eye condition as your heroine in your newest book.
Yes, yes. Yes.
So there's a connection there. And that's also, okay. So the next book is A Woman of Prayer.
Yes. That's the fourth book in the Cousins O'Connor.
Yes. And it features Hope and Henry's adopted sister, correct?
Yes. Winnie. And that Winnie was introduced in my first Christmas novella, O'Connor Christmas novella. I had finished the 6 books and then the prequel love story, A Light in the Window. And I just wanted to stay with them, you know?
Yeah.
So I went from that point, and I did from the point of the last book, and I did a Connor Christmas story. And it was about Charity and Mitch, which is the second, you know, book in the O'Connor saga, and that second love story. And I had her want to have a baby so bad. She had these 11-year-old twins, and she never was able to. She wanted a whole house full, like her mom did, you know. And so she ends up, you know, holding babies with her sister-in-law at the, you know, the orphanage, where the unwed mothers, the home for unwed mothers. And that's where she meets Winnie when she's 5. And she's got crossed eyes, and she's just a terror. And so that's really fun to get Winnie's background. You know, it's 99 cents, you know, on Amazon. It's called A Whisper of Hope. Is that right? A Whisper of Hope. Okay. Is that right?
I've written so
many with the word hope in it. I think it is A Whisper of Hope.
I think it is. And we featured it. Yes, it is A Whisper of Hope. We featured it on the podcast too, a few years back as well. Yeah.
Thank you.
Because we loved it. That was a beautiful Christmas story. We absolutely loved it.
I loved it too, because it was fun getting back. And I had somebody tell me that I don't like novellas. I don't like writing them. I don't like reading them. But that changed my mind, because I somebody told me, you write a novella like a novel, like a little novel, you know, and that was what I want to do. I want to tell the whole story, you know, but in condensed version. So
which is hard to do.
Yeah, it is. It is for me.
Yeah, I love it. And so, but in this one, is it our hero that is grounded in God?
Yes, very much so. Very much so. He was an orphan, and it's a whim and a prayer. And the heroine is this, you know, she's Winnie from, you know, that Christmas story. And she's immature. She's kind of flies by the seat of her pants, and she's younger because she skipped a grade. You could do that back then. I actually researched it. She skipped a grade, plus she's real little, so she's kind of, you know, just, she looks young and she acts young. And when she was 4 at the orphanage, he was an orphan too, and the boys orphanage would come for mass on Sundays with the girls' orphanage. And he saw her when he was 10 years old. He saw her when she was five. She was made fun of because of her crossed eyes. And everybody just ridiculed her. And she reminded him of his little sister that he lost when she was five. And so he took a shine to Winnie and started protecting her and keeping her out of trouble whenever he was around. And they became dear friends, and they end up being best friends for life, because when Charity and Mitch adopt Winnie, Charity knows that he was her best friend, Winnie's best friend at the orphanage. So she's kind of like a busybody type, a lovable busybody. She arranges for this elderly couple down the street who never had kids to foster him when he's 10. And he's an incredible kid.
Yeah.
And she does that for Winnie. Okay. And so they become best friends, you know, they stay best friends all the way. And now he's 24 and she's 18, 17, going to be 18. And the problem is, you know, they're best friends and she just worships him. Okay. But the problem is, he's fallen in love with her. Mm. And he felt really awful about it. Like when he was 20 and she was, you know, he was 21 and she was 16, he felt really bad about it, you know, because that wasn't right. But now she's 18 and, you know, but he's never going to tell her, because when he has this knack that when she starts to date a guy that she likes, if they like her, she loses interest and actually hates him. She doesn't want to be around him. Yeah. She never, her cousin Abby, who's her best friend, girlfriend, says, boy, you know, why? Beck is too good to waste as a friend. He's so, you know, he's got so much going for him. But, you know, Winnie just shivers every time she says that, because she feels like if she and Beck ever got romantic, it would be over. She would end up hating him, and she couldn't lose the best thing that's ever happened to her. So that's kind of the thrust of this story. But the problem is, he is in love with her, but he understands that. So he never tells her, lets her know that he is falling for her until they're in a play together. It's a fundraiser for the Boston Children's Aid Society. And Winnie she's like the assistant to her drama teacher who is doing this fundraiser for it. And it's Annie Get Your Gun, and Winnie has the lead, but the lead for the play falls off the stage and breaks his leg. So Beck, who has a photographic memory and rehearses all Winnie's lines with her, he gets railroaded into being the love interest in this play. And he has to kiss her at the end of the play. And that's when it all starts, because he kisses her and it's all over for him, but he notices she's responding, and that's where it all starts, where the problems all start, because she doesn't want anything to do with a romantic relationship with him, but he suddenly isn't satisfied with just the friendship anymore. So that's the conflict throughout the book. So
yeah. Ooh, this sounds interesting. I cannot wait to read it. And it releases on September 8th?
Huh, that's correct.
Okay. Very exciting. And did I see also that if you pre-order,
yes,
you get your name put in to be drawn to be have a character named after you. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes. In this book, you get a character named after you in A Women of Prayer, which comes out September 8th. So it's not like you have to wait for it.
Yeah.
And it's a real good part. It's a pretty good sized part.
Okay.
And so I'm asking people, if they pre-order, that they have to do, it's the honor system. All they have to do is send me an email and say they pre-ordered, and I'll throw their name in a hat, and they can get their name. I'm picking one person to get their name in the book and a free a signed paperback copy and a $25 gift card. So it's a good deal. If they're planning on reading it, might as well pre-order so that they can be in the contest. That's how it works.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. Okay, now I do remember, if anybody has Julie's newsletter. She put one out, I think maybe a couple weeks ago.
Yes,
I'm trying
I did.
To remember, where mm-hmm. you talked about we talked a little bit about it's been 3 years and that's mm-hmm. been a frustration for you because I know you love to write. But you said you had a real hard time with Winnie.
Yeah, I did.
In liking her. Can you share a little bit on that?
Yeah, I made a big mistake in A Dare and a Prayer, the book prior to Winnie's story, because in that book, I made Winnie like a kind of a selfish teenager. And she butts heads with Charity. That's just the whole story. And I didn't like her in A Dare and a Prayer, you know, but she wasn't a big part of it, so I didn't worry about it. Well, then here I am doing a book about her. I just went into this book not liking her. So I was, and as a result, I kind of dragged my feet. It was really hard to write this book. A lot of prayer went in this book. I have 7 prayer partners. All of them were praying for me, you know, to get back into the groove. So I finally did write it. And even after writing it, Melissa, I'll be honest with you, I still wasn't super crazy about her. But then I started every edit. I do a lot of edits on it. I went through and I started softening her hair here and there. And I just changed her completely. So she's nothing like what I had in Henry's story. So much so that I think I'm going to go back in and fix that so she doesn't come across that way. Mm-hmm. Because that does hurt. That does hurt people going into this. But just like Charity, I had people with Charity, they couldn't. I had people ask me to maim. They want to see Charity maimed or killed and for me to please slap her for them. I mean, they hated Charity, hated her. I even had my editor and agent say, Julie, this is going to be a tough one because nobody's going to like this gal. And you know what happened? I ended up falling in love with Charity. And I just slowly, the arc was so wonderful where she came to the Lord. And she ends up being my favorite character in the whole family. She's just mm-hmm. a hoot. I just love her.
She is.
And so I thought I can do that with Winnie too. So that's what I've done. And I'm hoping, I mean, you know, she's immature. She's young. But mm-hmm. what happens throughout the book is a real strong arc. So
yeah.
I hope people end up liking it. They're going to like Beck right off the bat. He pulled me through this book, let me tell you, because he's just so cool. I love him to pieces.
Well, I'm glad we have our hero to pull us through.
Yes,
for sure.
Yes.
Yeah, but if she's anything like Charity, I think we'll fall in love with her.
She's just like Charity. And that's finally where you can see that as the book goes on, and that does help in their relationship. So,
which is so cool to see that you did that when it's an adopted child, right? To have them mirroring,
because
one of her
other two daughters are both really good girls. They're just, you're gonna love them. I can't wait to write Julia's story. And Hope is just a dream. And so Winnie, you know, she's got a lot against her because not only is she not blood, but she's not good. I mean, she's just not sweet like the other two sisters and obedient. She butts heads with Charity. And then also her mother, Charity, is gorgeous. And Winnie has always felt like she's not attractive. So that's a lot of conflict going on in that family, but it gets resolved. So praise God.
Yeah. Charity and Mitch, I believe, were described as both quite gorgeous as a couple.
Yeah, right? they were both, you know, out of all the entire O'Connor clan, Charity was always the one that was considered just drop-dead beautiful. Guys just fell over. She doesn't, what Revell put on the book, the cover, I didn't think she was gorgeous, but that's okay. And there's a cute story about that. The cover of Charity's book in the Daughters of Boston series, Revell sent me a picture, you know, she sent me, and she was kind of flat-chested. And part of Charity's appeal is she's like a buxom blonde. She's, you know, she's very built. And the guys noticed that. Plus, she's very good-looking. So the guys, she always got guys. And so when they sent it to me, I went, she looked flatter than Faith, who was, in the first book, mourned that she was not busty like Charity. So I said, you got to fix this. You got to make her bustier. Well, Revell sent me, my editor and my artist sent me a picture. Did I ever tell you this?
No.
Where it was a joke, but they made her boobs huge. And it was just, I just died laughing when I saw it, you know. But anyway, yeah, I don't know why I went into that, except we had a lot of fun with Revelle on various.
Well, I bet you did. That yeah. does sound, I'm glad they had a great sense of humor too. And you guys,
I am too. Because you got to have that with me, you know.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I love it. I love it. It's so, okay. So September 8th is release date for right. Women of Prayer. But mm-hmm. right now, readers can join to start with the O'Connor Cousins series.
Yes.
With A Wing and a Prayer with you.
Yes, yes. Okay. And I will say, you know, a lot of people, I mean, it is better if you read the O'Connors from the very beginning. But I would say that for the first two series, definitely. But the Cousins series is so far removed that, you know, it's not really going to ruin. There's a lot, in most of my books, I put a big twist. Like a mystery type twist at the end in most of my books. And so though that would be ruined if the first six books are read out of order. Okay. But these here, no, it wouldn't be ruined. And you can start with A Wing and a Prayer and see if you just like the family and stuff, you know.
Awesome. Awesome. What's your hope for readers when they read Winnie's story?
My hope for that is, It's actually kind of a theme that I put on in the prologue. And that is, you know, Winnie is mourning the fact that everybody makes fun of her. And Beck always kind of calms her. He's 10, she's 5. He always calms her and says, they're the freaks, not you. You're beautiful. And he goes, what? And she says, why don't I feel that? And he says, and this is the line that gets me every time, that's because you're listening to people instead of to God. And that's the theme. You know, we tend to listen to people and listen to ourselves. I mean, here I go getting weepy. We look at ourselves through our eyes. What a ruin. Because God looks at us as the apple of his eye. He loves us. He doesn't look at a man for how he looks. He looks at the heart. And that's what this is all about, you know, that Winnie has to learn that it's having God's approval and living for God and seeing herself through his eyes. And you can only do that when you live for him, because then you become obedient. And that is the road to true happiness, true peace, true joy. And yeah. it's an important lesson that we all have to learn.
It really is. Our pastor is constantly saying, stop listening to your voice and the voice of others and start speaking yes. the truth of yes. God, right? You have to speak that scripture back.
Yes, that. Yes. In my memoir devotional, you will remember this, that I have a chapter on eternal language and earthly language versus eternal perspective versus earthly perspective. And that's what it's all about. You know, mm-hmm. speaking God's word and believing it instead of what the world says or what Satan says, you know, because, you know, God's word is eternal. And then also actions, you know, basing your life on that, because that's where real true success comes from.
Yeah, I love that, especially in this day and age when, especially with our kids, with all the social media and all that pressure that comes from, like, you need to be perfect all yeah. the time and have this glamorous life. I love that. I think that's a great message for people.
Yeah, I think so too. I certainly need it, and I'm 75.
Yes, yes. Oh, well, goodness, Julie, it's been so good to just chat and catch yes. up.
Thank you, Melissa, very much. This has been great.
Yes, yes. And so for those of you listening, again, I'll put links in the notes for this episode so you can quickly sign up for those things and pre-order the book. And I don't know, who knows, maybe you will, your name will be in the book.
Yeah,
that will be exciting.
That'll be fun.
Well, thanks so much for joining.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, please consider sharing our podcast. Every share helps us reach more readers and authors like you. Until next time, happy and blessed reading and writing.